right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, June 10th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday. It is 70 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Actually, it looks like we're going to dry out a little bit, hopefully at least until this afternoon. It's kind of soggy and soppy here and everything is plush and green, but hey, it could be a lot worse. Could be 100 degrees and desert-like already, like it is for some of my friends. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show yesterday, Lies, Lies, Lies of Keeping Us Safe. We talked about all kinds of things. We looked at an update on the anthrax story out of the DOD, shipping it all over the world. And actually, there's another update to that today. We'll take a look at that. We also looked at the failures in the TSA, how they failed 95% of their red line testing and incendiary devices had made it through TSA checkpoints. There was another story to boot. They'd found 37 people on the TSA payroll who were on the terror watch list. So that was great. Made you feel really safe. What else do we talk about? DARPA. Brain hacking. Oh, yes, we had the implantable electrodes. That was a good one. So I don't know. I guess we'll just continue on from where we left off yesterday. There's so many stories that we never get to on a daily basis. And I just don't know every day. Like, if we have like 20 topics we deal with and I try to mix and match them all. Well, let's get to the one little blurb I saw in regards to an update to the DOD anthrax story. It appears that there is another lab and another country. The same, it is a lab in another country, and that would be the UK. They had gotten their hands on a shipment of anthrax from Dugway back in 2007, I believe it said. And of course, they said, you know, if someone had been infected, we'd know by now. Well, yes. But they also want to know, how did this happen? And that's what a lot of the different countries are asking. Like, how did this possibly happen? Especially since you are like the mothership for biopathogens at Dugway. And you don't even know how to kill this this bioterror product. So I guess we'll see. Kind of interesting that just little blips and blurps are coming out about that, and we're not getting the whole entire story all at once. What else? We talked about the bird flu and the egg shortage. Heb grocery store down in Texas has started putting up signs saying that they are allowing commercial customers only 3 cartons of eggs at a time. I mean, that doesn't seem like such a big deal. How many of us buy 3 cartons of eggs at a time? But it could be. I mean, the fact that they are putting a limit on things right now could definitely be an issue. And I saw a story this morning that they are now talking. Remember, the original count for the number of birds culled in the United States, never before seen like this, worst outbreak ever, was 14 million birds. Yesterday, in the newest update that I had seen, we were up to 46 million birds culled, which is a huge number. But now they are talking about potentially importing eggs from other countries. And that frightens me because, I mean, we at least know the poison and the enemy that we have in this country. But when you start getting eggs shipped in from other countries, you know, it's the same concern I always had with the TPP. Is you don't really know what they're doing to your food or where they're coming from. Country of origin, at least you knew it was from the United States. Actually, here, we could do this. Let's do a quick little clippy, and we'll see what they say about the eggs.
The growing nationwide egg shortage is prompting the U.S. to open its doors to imported egg products from the Netherlands. It's the first time in more than a decade that the U.S. is bringing in eggs from Europe. Prices for egg products used by food manufacturers and bakeries went up 200% last month, and consumers are noticing.
They've been going up, the prices. They're getting higher and higher.
The reason for the egg price jump is the bird flu outbreak that hit farms largely in the Midwest. About 47 million birds are dead or dying. The majority of them, egg-laying hens that produce a very large proportion of the eggs that Americans eat.
It's created a much bigger demand on those, so the egg prices have gone up.
One commodities reporting firm says the price of a carton of large eggs more than doubled in a month. Sandy Kozel, The Associated Press.
And that's pretty crazy. And I mean, if you take a look at where this is leading, it's not a pretty picture. I mean, I would think, I guess I'd rather get eggs from the Netherlands than China, right? Or India, where we have large pollution problems. But on the other hand, you know, the fact that the price of everything is going up. I mean, who can go to the grocery store and not spend $50? It's just unbelievable. And it's unsustainable. Look at how many baby boomers we have, my parents included, who are retired and are on a fixed income. And I know back when we were kids, we would look at old people and they would talk about, you know, their Social Security check and how they didn't have a lot of money. But the cost of living was so much less back then compared to now. I mean, they nickel and dime the shit out of you. And then they take your house when you can't pay your taxes. I mean, that happened to my next door neighbor when I lived in Buffalo. And it was not a pretty picture. She was in her 70s and they took her house. They sold it at auction. So that's about it for an update on the bird flu and the eggs. Let's see, one more thing. This is something we were going to talk about yesterday, and I never got to it. Tuberculosis is something that I've mentioned, that it's been showing up in the scene, and especially, you know, the super bugs that they've been talking about. Well, this is some rare tuberculosis that this patient came into the United States with and then traveled all over the place. And now they're trying to track down anyone who came into contact with her. So here, we'll check out this one too. And then we're going to move on to something else.
This woman is now in isolation?
She's in isolation at the National Institutes of Health. So as you pointed out, this has been ongoing for a couple of months now. She did fly into Chicago, but then traveled around as well. We know to Missouri and Tennessee. It sounds like at some point, you know, went to see the doctor, got this diagnosis, and then was taken by special ground and air transport to the NIH. Because
now, here's the thing. She flew into Chicago infected with this drug-resistant tuberculosis. And if anyone's ever been to Chicago O'Hare, it's a big hub. It's an international hub. It flies out to just about everywhere from there. I don't know. Do they do international flights out of there? Or is that just a main hub? But it's a pretty busy, damn huge airport. So Typhoid Mary, a few months ago, touched down there and then traveled all over.
To the level of concern. You mentioned it, Carol. This is a drug-resistant form of tuberculosis. Something known as an extensively drug-resistant. There is moderately drug-resistant and extensively drug-resistant.
That's the first I've heard of extensively drug-resistant. That's good.
What that basically means is that the four first-line drugs that are typically used to treat tuberculosis will not work in her case, do not seem to work in her case. So we're going to need to find other drugs that will possibly be a benefit to her. And that's what's ongoing right now, Carol.
So they're trying to track down everyone she came into contact with, which seems impossible.
It's a real, you know, we've seen this before with other types of infectious diseases, even with Ebola most recently, Carol. It's challenging. First of all, the flight, right? 15-hour flight, India to Chicago. We know that airplanes, as a general rule, aren't great places for infectious diseases to spread because they're well ventilated. TB does spread in crowded places that are not well ventilated. But that flight, that air flight's going to be the first place they start to check within a few rows of where she was sitting. And then
I'd like to know what airline flight is well ventilated and book me a ticket. I mean, they recycle the air in there and it's hot and stuffy and you're on top of each other. So I don't really see where he's got well good ventilation on an aircraft and a 15-hour flight from India to Chicago. That's pretty major.
They're going to look in all the other places that she spent time and how much time did she spend with certain people. It takes prolonged contact.
It says bacterial infection spreads through the air, usually attacks patients' lungs, can infect the kidneys, the spine, and the brain, and it can be fatal.
Well, it spreads through the air. It's not just a quick sort of transmission. You need a lot of contact with the person over many, many hours, many days even. So who were those people? Do they need to be tested? That's what's...
Yeah, and they don't even know. Like, who were these people on the plane with her who sat next to her for a 15-hour flight, and then we let her hit three states after the fact before the National Institute of Health got their hands on her?
That's what they're doing. That's part of the investigation.
So there you have it. So put on a seatbelt for TB. I'm sure at some point we're going to see that cropping back up in the news. again. We're going to change gears here now. Some of the things I want to look at has been a couple cyber attack, quote unquote, cyber attacks on federal facilities. And now I see yesterday there apparently was a bomb threat on the White House. I caught that on Pigmind's uploads this morning. They had cleared out the White House press briefing room after a telephoned bomb threat had come in, as well as a TSA hearing that was going on in regards to their security lapses. So how fitting is that? Let's see if I don't know if in this briefing room if they actually say anything when they're clearing everyone out, but hold on, I got all these clips.
Yeah, at each of these agencies. We'll come back.
Oh, they were just told they had to be evacuated. So that's it. You see all the reporters running out. They don't know what to do. Then they actually come back. Hold on.
Welcome back.
There they are. Tell me. Good afternoon, everybody.
What's new?
We'll try this again. Just to give you an update on what has transpired, as many of you may have heard from the Secret Service, shortly before 2 o'clock today, a telephonic bomb threat concerning the room that we are now all in was called into the Metropolitan Police Department. Local Police Department contacted Secret Service officials who determined that for the safety of all of us, they needed to evacuate the room and to sweep it. Fortunately, here at the White House, the Secret Service maintains the resources that are necessary to quickly make the room safe and make sure that it's safe for all of us. And they did that quickly, and now we're ready to restart.
What was the president doing at the time, even if he wasn't impacted? What was he physically doing while we were evacuating?
I'm not sure exactly what he was doing. He was here at the White House, but I'm not sure where he was.
So interesting that there was a bomb threat. You don't see that too often. Here, let me play the TSA one, too, where they were at the hearing in regards to all of their security lapses. And what's even great is he's like, oh, yeah, the Secret Service, you know, they swept the room. Well, I mean, would I even feel like I trusted the Secret Service with their buffoonery that we've seen time and time again, hookers and booze? I don't know if I'd be feeling so safe climbing back into that room.
We need to have stand in recess for this committee hearing. We have apparently the Capitol Police is clearing this. So we should be locked down and stay in place. Okay, we're clearing the floor. So if you could, in orderly fashion, please exit.
And the thing is the guy that's talking is the chairman of the Homeland Security. And he's like, what, we stay in place? What, for a bomb threat? You're going to sit there, right?
As quickly as possible. Thank you.
And I think that's it. They all cleared the Senate hearing, so who knows if they came back. I don't know. You know, it just, when I see this stuff, I don't even know what to say anymore about any of it. Maybe I shouldn't look anymore. And it'll be all better. It just all goes away when you don't pay attention anymore. All right. Let's see. I just thought I had to bring that up since that was brand new. Brand spanking new news. We also looked at brain wasting diseases over the last couple days. And there was another story that I forgot to bring up yesterday. You know, they think that they have all these reasons why we end up with things such as dementia and Alzheimer's and, you know, different diseases that affect us long term. Well, here's another theory, I guess, or another bit of research that shows something else. Alzheimer's disease, poor sleep may be a trigger for dementia. So for any of you who stay up late nights, take heed. New research has found that poor sleep may trigger Alzheimer's disease. The sampling size was small, so they only looked at 26 people in this study. but it suggested that the lack of REM sleep increases a protein that leads to Alzheimer's. You know, I've read quite a bit about that before and about what sleep and lack of sleep physically does to the body. And they really do believe that in sleeping, it is a time for the brain to clear out any of the, I wouldn't call it poisons, but like garbage that's left over in the brain. And there are all kinds of things in the brain that get cleared out. It's the amyloids, those amyloid plaques that they believe cause Alzheimer's, literally get cleaned out of the brain when you're sleeping. Beta amyloid brain buildup. The research is from scientists at the University of California, Berkeley. The research team knew going in that rapid eye movement sleep is not only a necessary component to being well-rested, but also to having a healthy brain. I read there was a study probably about 2 years ago that talked a lot about this. REM sleep cleans out beta amyloid proteins from the brain. So there you go. Beep, beep. The beta amyloid protein has been linked to Alzheimer's disease and other dementia. And amyloid plaques are in healthy brains, but only in small doses. However, when they build up in the brain, they stop neurons from firing. And it is believed that leads to memory loss and results in dementia. The more amyloid plaque buildup, the more Alzheimer's, the most common form of dementia, and other dementia progresses. Eventually, dementia kills on an average within 8 to 12 years. In a study published in the Nature of Journal, in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience, researchers looked at 26 people between the ages of 65 and 83. None of the participants had previously been diagnosed with Alzheimer's or a sleep disorder. First, the participants were given a positron emission tomography scan. The PET scan measured about the amounts of amyloid already in their brains, and then the 26 were given 120 word pairs to memorize and immediately tested on their retention of those word pairs. Their sleep that night was monitored, and graphs were produced enabling researchers to learn the quality of sleep they had attained. After 8 hours of sleep, they were again tested on the retention of the same 120 word pairs, and further, their brains were scanned. Neuroscientist Dr. William Jaggett, a part of the study, said in a press release that they found participants who slept the poorest had the highest amounts of beta amyloid in their brains. And further, those participants also did the poorest when trying to remember word pairs. So is it as simple as getting a good night's sleep is what you got to wonder. I could tell you when I stress over things, and especially this network causes me a lot of stress. I definitely have issues the next day trying to remember things, trying to get moving. My brain feels foggy. I mean, sleep is a huge, huge, huge component to me being on my game. Over the past few years, the links between sleep, beta amyloid, memory, and Alzheimer's disease have been growing stronger. Dr. Jaggett wrote, our studies show that this beta amyloid deposition may lead to a vicious cycle in which sleep is further disturbed and memory impaired. Yes, and I only got 8 hours of sleep last night as opposed to 12. Dr. Matt Walker, lead author of the study, said the results show hope for unlocking the mystery behind Alzheimer's. Researchers say that there is no doubt now that there is a link between sleep, memory, the beta amyloid proteins, and Alzheimer's. The more beta amyloid you have in certain parts of your brain, the less sleep you get, and consequently, the worse your memory. Additionally, the less sleep you have, the less effective you are at clearing out the bad protein, and it is a vicious cycle. But we do not yet know which of these factors, the bad sleep or the bad protein, initially begins the cycle. Which one is the finger that flicks the first domino, triggering the cascade? Dr. Walker says their discovery offers hope, and they will do more research in the area of sleep and Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. Sleep could be a novel therapeutic target for fighting back against memory impairment in older adults, even with those with dementia. I got to tell you, I love my sleep. I've said it many times, but sleep is my best friend. It's something I never, ever get enough of. And I wish I did. All right, continuing on the brain, I want to take a look at neurons for Algernon, We had this one queued up yesterday from May 29th, but I didn't get to it either. Scientists restore memories in amnesiac mice and hope to help humans. We've talked about this memory restoration and some of this research that's been going on for quite a while. And it was interesting that a new story just came out about it, so I figured we would take a look at it. Team of researchers have managed to unblock forgotten memories in lab mice using light pulses. And this was one of the – there was an article back probably 8-9 months ago that had looked at 5 or 6 different ways DARPA was sprinkling money around in brain research for retrieving and erasing memories, and flashes of light was one of them. Using light pulses, a report published in the journal Science says, using a group of lab mice, chemicals, electric shocks, and light, scientists have managed to recover previously lost memories. Gee, that sounds comforting. The process of memory consolidation, when a short-term unstable memory turns into a long-term one, takes place in so-called memory engram cells, a collection of specific neurons. And in the experiment detailed in Friday's report, a group of lab mice were injected with a virus, great, which makes these neurons produce a light-sensitive protein, thus activating in response to light. Wow, that's lovely. So they inject them with a virus, which makes the neurons produce a light-sensitive protein, thus activating in response to light. Yeah, I want that done to me. The mice were put in a chamber where they received an electrical shock, and the rodents remembered the experience and came to associate it with the chamber. When they later were taken into the chamber, they froze in place. Well, okay, so like that wouldn't happen to anyone. The mice were then injected with a chemical called anisomycin, A-N-I-S-O-M-Y-C-I-N, which prevents memory consolidation. Well, that's pretty frightening. I'm going to copy that chemical. After that, the animals no longer showed signs of recognizing the chamber where they were electrocuted before. Wow. Don't you see some great future applications for that? Then the scientists used pulses of light to activate their engram cells. And after that, the animals again started freezing in fear when brought to the electrical shock chamber. Oh, my God. Again, where are the ethics? And why do we need to understand how we can erase past memories of electrical shock therapy and then replace them? Sounds like something they want to be using in one of those super secret torture facilities that we wouldn't admit that we had, but now we had to. Quote, these findings are probably applicable to certain conditions of human amnesia, such as the early stage of Alzheimer's patients. Oh, yes. What this means, researchers say, is that memories will appear to be lost due to illness and trauma, but they could actually just be blocked while remaining recoverable. The exact mechanism of amnesia has not been completely discovered, but while scientists believe it is caused by permanent damage to memory-storing neurons, others, like the doctors working on this experiment, believe it is the blockage of access to those neurons that is the problem. In the latter case, not all is lost for human amnesiacs. So that's wonderful to know. They might decide to start treating you for your Alzheimer's, not with sleep therapy, but with some sort of virus they inject into your brain to get it to light up when they put light on it and then recover your memories. Could be great for interrogation techniques as well, I'm thinking. Okay, so we saw a couple cyber attacks as well. There was one that was on the federal personnel office that potentially got over, I believe it was 4 million names and personal information of federal employees. And then I saw yesterday that the U.S. Army website was also hacked. Now, it just makes you wonder, you know, and I think they were saying that it was China now is who they're trying to blame it on again. It's always the Chinese or the Russians, right? Oh, and this, of course, isn't going to load, so we're not really going to talk about this. Just know we had the personnel office of the federal government hacked, and now the U.S. Army official website. Put on a seatbelt. The lockdown on the internet is coming because that is what these incidences are always good for. I don't know. I don't know what else I feel like talking about, honestly, guys. I'm kind of beat today. Doing a show every day and trying to actually have life just is pretty difficult most of the time. What do we talk about now? Well, NSA leak confirms Skynet is for real. Do we care about that one? Oh, Jesus. Hold on. I think I mentioned the B word too many times. This computer has now completely stopped doing anything. So let's go to the other machine and log into everything. I don't know. After a while, this just gets really tiring. Like, long-term vacation required for Jules. Maybe never coming back. Runaway screaming! I would much rather still be sleeping or drinking my coffee, reading a story quietly in my happy place. Okay. NSA leak confirms Skynet is for real. But no actual evidence of Terminators as of yet. Phew. Skynet! The fictional AI warfare system depicted in the Terminator movies has over time morphed into the kind of pop culture slang, a tongue-in-cheek shorthand for people's misgivings over a tech-dominated dystopian future, yes, that we all see coming fast and furiously right in our faces. But hey, nobody seems to care. So why should I guess? But little did we know that Skynet has been a real entity all along. And yes, I would have told you that probably even 20 years ago. But hey, nobody listened. Nobody cares. With a new report indicating that the name is used for an actual technological surveillance program conducted under the watch of the United States National Security Agency. According to an article by The Intercept, Skynet is a very real NSA security program that monitors the location and communication patterns of suspects of interest by harvesting mobile network metadata and bulk call records. So it's not as bad as we thought. The report details how journalist and long-serving Al Jazeera correspondent Ahmed, whatever, Mufak Zidian, is he the one that's getting the 1,000 lashes now, I believe, was targeted by a Skynet system as a suspected courier moving information between terrorist agents. In a leaked internal PowerPoint presentation sourced by controversial NSA whistleblower and former CIA contractor Snowden, the Skynet program is defined as a collaborative, cloud research effort. Skynet applies complex combinations of geospatial, geotemporal, pattern of life. Yes, gotta love patterns of life. You know that they are doing that to everybody. And travel analytics to bulk DNR data to identify patterns of suspected activity. So if you ever do anything different in a day, you are a suspect of something. Top secret documents, many particular details of which have been redacted, describe how Skynet analyzes the movements and behaviors of mobile phone users to ascertain high-scoring selectors who are considered likely candidates to be terrorist couriers. I don't know. In one of the slides, Al Jazeera's journalist Zadhan is identified by the system as the, quote, highest scoring selector that traveled to Peshawar and Lahore. Underneath his picture, Zadhan is described as a member of Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood who, quote, works for Al Jazeera. Yeah, well, aren't any journalists who don't bark, squawk, the official story all considered terroristic? Because I think they are. one of the presentations, Skynet Courier Detection via Machine Learning, and this is all about the algorithm and metadata, explains how, quote, we are looking for different people using phones in similar ways. From GSM metadata, we can measure aspects of each selector's pattern of life, social network, and travel behavior. Aside from the practical implications for investigative journalists, the revelations provide yet further evidence of the ways in which stored metadata can be used against unsuspecting individuals. But on the bright side, hey, at least this Skynet isn't single-mindedly busying itself, creating a legion of murderous T-800 hell-bent on wiping us out, right? Well, maybe, maybe not. There was another story that came out yesterday in regards to the forever unmanned aerial vehicles, droning on forever, Boeing patents, UAVs that could fly indefinitely and recharge in midair. I remember reading a story about this about a year ago. Apparently, this is ready to rock and roll just about as drone technology continues to advance. Boeing has raised the bar even higher. The aerospace giant has received a patent for a UAV that could fly forever, recharging in midair via a tether attached to the ground. The patent filed in March of 2013, that was probably right about the time I read about this, maybe 2 years ago, and approved by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office just last week, could revolutionize unmanned aerial vehicles as we know them, foregoing the need to refuel or to recharge on landing. According to the patent, the electrically powered drones would have a retractable tether cable that would connect to a power source, and when the drone was fully charged, it would automatically fly off to continue its task, and another UAV could then take its place at the charging station. The drone could be connected to a number of sources, including land and sea-based power supplies, and it could even connect to moving vehicles, allowing the drone to fly while charging. Well, they do that already with Air Force aircraft. A friend of mine that I actually grew up with was part of the mid-air refueling team that was using jet fuel, but she was part of the mid-air refueling team in the Air Force at one point, and they've been doing that at least since the first Gulf War, I could tell you. The concept could be extremely beneficial for drone delivery services, like Amazon, or for those which need to stay airborne for an extended time due to long-term experiments, like the X-37B. Long-term monitoring or travel, GeekWire reported. It could also completely do away with landing gear, which could be heavy and burdensome for drones. In this video down below, Patent Yogi shows how the drone could stay up all day long. Let's see what Patent Yogi has to say. Oh, there we go. All right, let's see. Come on, Patent Yogi. I don't know, this machine's doing all kinds of strange stuff now, so hold on. While Patent Yogi's trying to play, we're going to have to find Patent Yogi on a on my other machine. Wow, they're not kidding about, like, sleep, man. 8 hours just isn't enough when your brain is going 10,000 miles a minute when you're trying to sleep. Thinking about all the shit you got to do. All right, here we go, Patent Yogi. Let's play, buddy. So I got a picture. This is about all I have. Hold on. We'll have to find this story over here. Yeah. All right. Hold on. Sorry for the false start. Let's get Skype all fired up. Online. Let's get ourselves online. Oh, it doesn't want to let me online. I'm going to say screw it. God. Holy shit. I have never in my life of being involved in technology ever seen the amount of bullshit that I see here on a daily freaking basis. Honestly. All right. Patent Yogi, we're going to try this all over again. Let's try to connect if it allows me to. If they haven't deemed me a terrorist because of too many keywords this morning, it's still trying. Come on, baby. Let's go. Holy shit. I guess Skype doesn't want to play today. Well, it says it connects, but everything is just gray. Gray with no sound. And no number ticking. Damn it. All right. Well, hold on. One more try. We're going to do one more try. And then I'm going to say screw it. And we'll go on to something else that doesn't matter, right? Oh. Here we go. Now it's ringing dingy in. Ah, that was great. All right. So now that we've completely forgotten what we were even talking about, let's get to, what was his name? I don't even remember. Patent Yogi, looking at how the UAV could stay up all day long. Come on, Patent Yogi. Oh, you're fucking kidding me. All right, we'll screw Patent Yogi because Patent Yogi's out of the picture now. We'll just finish reading the story. Boeing has so far given no indication on whether or not it actually plans to build these drones. Oh, yeah, you think? An increasing number of companies are currently... Oh, here we go!
Hi, I am Deepak. Welcome to this new video. Let's check the patent box.
What on earth?
This week, we got an awesome patent for you. This patent is from Boeing. The patent mentions the names of two inventors, James Childress and John Viniotis. Congratulations, John and James, for receiving this patent. I'm really excited to show you how this patent works. The patent discloses a drone that can be charged mid-air. Currently, it is difficult to operate drones for extended time periods. So this invention solves a major problem in using drones in real-life scenarios. These inflatable drones include a tether that connects with ground-based power supply to provide power to the aircraft. This enables the use of drones for extended time periods. For example, for a pizza delivery service, the drones are required to be operational almost throughout the day.
For a pizza delivery service! And they show an illustration of a pizza store with these three things with tethers sticking out of the roof and all the drones pulling up and recharging. Oh my God.
So these drones could be recharged mid-air from ships, from other flying objects,
or from pizza shops,
from moving vehicles on the ground, or even from high-altitude balloons. Thanks for liking and sharing the video. Please click on the red button below to receive updates on new videos uploaded every week.
So that was worth the wait. Oh my God. Good old Patent Yogi. Oh, I'll have to subscribe to his channel just for a good laugh. That was pretty awesome. Anyway, it says it was reported last week that NASA and Verizon are investing in new technology that would use already existing cell phone towers to monitor civilian and commercial drones. How interesting is that? That's the first I've actually seen that. There's a link to a story, too. We'll look at that. In April, Amazon was granted the authority to test delivery drones in the U.S. Hey, they finally got their go-ahead. We did a story on that quite a while back where Amazon was pretty pissed off and went up over the Canadian border and were doing their test because the FAA wouldn't give them approval. So I guess the FAA finally gave them approval. The e-commerce giant hopes to revolutionize delivery services with technology. Let's put on a seatbelt, people. I didn't know that happened. That same month, so April, the FAA approved testing of UAVs by three insurance giants. What? AIG, State Farm, and USAA are all going to be using drones to fly over your house and take photos. Holy shit. The FAA has already come under fire for its alleged lack of privacy protections in its initial set of drone regulations. In April, EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center, filed a lawsuit against the agency asking a federal appeals court to review its decision. At present, the FAA prohibits commercial drone operators from flying drones beyond their line of sight. Right, that was one of the issues that Amazon was complaining about, and we had kind of looked at that like, how the hell would you do delivery drones all over the country while keeping a drone in line of sight? Literally, someone would have to be following it. I mean, you'd have to be driving with a drivable Google car or something and following them on the roads. So at present, FAA prohibits commercial drone operators from flying drones beyond their line of sight and restricts their use to daylight hours. Phew, no nighttime drone attacks apparently yet. Drones must weigh a maximum of 55 pounds, stay below 500 feet in the air, and fly less than 100 miles an hour. A drone operator must also pass an aeronautics test. Oh, I feel so much safer now. Here's the link from June 4th. So this was just a few days ago. It was last week. NASA and Verizon to monitor U.S. drone traffic with phone towers. NASA and Verizon working together. How interesting is that? This is the first that I have seen or heard of this. NASA and Verizon are investing in new technology that would use already existing cell phone tower networks to monitor civilian and commercial drones. The federal agency is scheduled to begin testing this new technology this summer. They are collaborating with Verizon to find a way to monitor private drone use. Yes, since they already got all the cell phones locked down. Signing a $500,000 agreement last year to, quote, jointly explore whether cell towers could support communications and surveillance of unmanned aerial systems at low altitudes, according to records obtained by The Guardian. NASA is working on an air traffic control system that would use radar and orbiting satellites to direct drone flight paths over the United States. So what? NASA is like taking over for the FAA here? NASA and Verizon. I don't even, this is just the next step into complete surveillance state. Like, I can't even get over this. NASA is working on an air traffic control system that would use radar and orbiting satellites to direct drone flight paths over the United States. Verizon is expected to make a proposal by 2017 for allowing the use of its estimated 12 to 15,000 cell towers nationwide as a drone tracking solution. How great is that? Because as they're tracking the drones are tracking you with HD video. According to The Guardian's Mark Harris, NASA is considering monitoring drones with a range of sensors, including radar, orbiting satellites, and cell phone signals. The UTM system is also likely to be cloud-based, meaning that drones will need an internet link to download information about weather, traffic, and restricted zones. Yes, and I'm going to add this. They also need an internet link to upload all of the surveillance data that they've collected on you. Back to his quote, that combination makes using the existing phone networks very attractive. The Federal Aviation Agency has been trying to tackle the issue of private drone regulation for years, attempting to balance the obvious utility of the devices with safety hazards posed by coexisting with other aircraft. The question will only become more salient as the agency estimated that private drones will become a $90 billion, with a B, dollar industry over the next 10 years, which is a conservative estimate, according to the Washington Post. The FAA has recently responded to pressure from Congress and private industry by hiring an advisor to deal with the crush of industry queries, according to Reuters. And if I can get back to my page, it's funny that they talked about it being a $90 billion plus dollar industry, because I did find on a financial website yesterday. Let me find the photo. I remember what it looked like. It was a little drone with a big camera on it. Oh, hold the phone. Titled, More Breakthroughs in Quote Unquote Flying Camera Market. I love the way they put that. Video chip juggernaut Ambarella, AMBA is their stock ticker symbol, closed above $100 for the first time last week, which is not bad for a stock that started the year at 50, and which I first recommended, this dude writing the story, to new tech superstar members at $23 a share in May last year. Guys, yes, if you want to make money, let's invest in the technology that will enslave us all. On Thursday afternoon, I read the transcript of the company's quarterly earnings call with analysts, and it was quite illuminating. Not sure if you know this, but most earning call transcripts are provided free at the website of SeekingAlpha.com, and it used to be very difficult and expensive to get these, but now it is a free public service, so that's interesting. I didn't know about that. My main takeaways from the comments by management and comments from analysts were the fact that high-definition video capture, transmission, and sharing by both public and commercial users are one of the few truly accelerating growth segments in the world. The inexpensive, quote-unquote, flying camera segment, otherwise known as drones, is just getting started, as is the use of HD color cameras to monitor ordinary homes through home security units of Comcast and AT&T. So I guess they have it going on, too. Among the benefits of the new chips from Ambarella are the ability to scan through up to 8 hours of video in 1 minute, and the ability to store and transmit all of that data locally and obtain it through an ordinary handheld device like a smartphone or an iPad. Wow, so they're going to be able to hold all that data in the drone without even being connected to a cell phone tower like we just read. Scan through 8 hours of video in just a minute and give you access to it through your mobile device. How great is that? Back to the story. This really is a big deal, somewhat akin to the start of the whole handheld communication growth segment itself, as it used to be very difficult and expensive to store, access, and view high-quality video, even for businesses. The fact that this is being pushed down to the home user at very reasonable cost is a breakthrough and helps to justify the rising expectations for small companies like Ambarella in this space that have patent protection. If the company ever does a secondary as a way to raise more cash for an acquisition or marketing, the shares will probably pull back sharply and provide an entry point for newcomers. So chalk that one up to future investment. Unbelievable. Yeah, absolutely. Let the games begin. It's on like Donkey Kong. Oh, what else do we look at today? There was a story that came out of Russia yesterday. I don't know if you guys remember their Android that they had. I saw a video on it last year. Pigmine had it. It looked like something out of a sci-fi flick, and it rode ATVs. Kind of like our Atlas, but he was dressed in combat gear. This one is titled, Russian combat android will be able to run, not walk, but run by the end of the year, says developer. The humanoid fighting robot will know how to run in a matter of months, says the head of the company working on the Russian android. The company is also developing a brain-computer interface technology and brand new equipment for the quote-unquote soldier of the future. Wow, that's got to make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. A combat robot android that resembles a human in appearance by the end of the year will be able to run, cross a barrier line, and perform other actions according to our plan, says Andrei Grigorev, Director General of the Advanced Research Foundation, ARF. The robot is destined to operate in, quote, most dangerous conditions, unquote, and be remotely controlled. However, it is not designed to run around with a rifle yet, as I'm going to add, as there are tracked and wheeled platforms more suitable for that. President Vladimir Putin, who saw the robot in action this January, said that it resembled, quote, a scene from a science fiction film, unquote. He also, I love the way they word this, he also enjoyed the new brain-computer interface technology. The development of the brain-computer interface that allows human brains to directly control technology is complete and is now being prepared to be passed on to government agencies. The interface is based on the application of the electrical activity of the brain detected by means of an EKG, kind of like the ones that we looked at where you had the thing that goes over your head and you can remotely control things, I would imagine. And they don't give a lot of detail here. The know-how is that is in the foundation has already interested our federal executive authorities. There have been relevant questions for us to pass the corresponding intellectual property and the results in accordance with our law. The head of the ARF also revealed that the development of the equipment for a soldier of the future had kicked off with a brainstorming session, and the scientists are studying all existing suggestions. According to Grigorev, coming up with the new type of equipment dubbed Ratnik 2 may take anywhere from 10 to 15 years. The Ratnik equipment includes a modern shooting armament, effective protection kits, reconnaissance, and communication assets, all in all about 10 various subsystems, and all aimed at the protection of a soldier on the battlefield. The Advanced Research Foundation in Russia was created in 2012 as an analog to the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, or more affectionately known as DARPA, which develops innovative products and technology and science for the U.S. Department of Defense. For the time being, the ARF, the Russian version, has 53 projects approved, and its laboratories are already working on 31 of them. So, I guess it's going to be a war of robots and unmanned aerial vehicles at some point soon. All taken over by hackers. It's just a great, great future we have. And I guess to kick off the end of the show, I've been saving this one. Here we go.
School funding is not a person.
Except for this commercial. All right, here we go.
Imagine if you were able to choose to become a better version of yourself. We're not talking health and fitness, but a bit like upgrading your phone. It's a pretty chilling thought, but a leading historian reckons one day humans will be able to become cyborgs, part man, part machine, and able to live forever.
Ding, 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 able to live forever.
Professor Yuval Noah Harari of the University of Jerusalem thinks that this could happen within 200 years or so to wealthy humans as they gradually merge with technology like computers and smartphones.
To wealthy humans coming out of an Israeli university.
But what are cyborgs? According to Google, they are fictional or hypothetical people whose physical abilities are extended beyond normal human limitations by mechanical elements built into the body. Harari says it will be the greatest evolution in biology since the appearance of life, and that we will be as different from today's humans as chimps are now from us. He argues that we have become the dominant species because of our ability to invent fictions like religion and money, the kind of things that help bind society together.
Yes, and religion and money are falling apart, so we better become cyborgs soon.
But he has said the decline of belief in religion will spur on change to the human race, as if we humans are saying we don't need God, just technology. Harari believes humans are driven by dissatisfaction and that we would not be able to resist the temptation to upgrade ourselves.
And we won't be able to resist the temptation. They're already getting everyone ready to open their arms and let it happen.
He has warned, however, that the cyborg technology would only be available to the wealthiest people in society, widening the gap between rich and poor.
Of course it will be, as we're all killing each other for the last few remaining scraps of food.
Which could maybe even mean that the rich could one day live forever, whilst the poor die out.
And I've been saying this since day one, talking about this shit, and here it is. And that's the end. All right, guys, so the rich might be able to live forever while the poor die out. Humans will become cyborgs within 200 years. Honestly, I don't think it's going to take that long. I mean, we're already moving down that path as we're doing brain implants and injectable brain electronics that aid health. And here's the end of this story. I read about some of this yesterday. Immortality. Yes, that is what it says in the title of this other story. So, you know what? I guess that's what we aspire to be. No more religion, no more money, no more food required. We just become cyborgs, and it'll be the biggest evolution, she said, making us as much different from chimps as we are today. It'll be a new brand of cyberhuman. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday. We have Josh live at 6 p.m. Eastern tonight. The Boys from New York, The Continued Condition with Jonathan and Steven at 8. Truth or Talk Radio from this week with April and Burstein at 9. And Antimedia Radio with Mr. Nick Burnaby and DB Schwartz at 11. All right, guys, everybody, take care. And I will catch up with you tomorrow.